From SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, this is Coronavirus, everything you need to know now.
From Doctor Radio Reports, here's Dr. Mark Siegel.
I'm Dr. Mark Siegel, Medical Director of Doctor Radio, Clinical Professor of Medicine, NYU Langone Health. Dr. Doug Bales, who really I've known since he was just beginning, but he's an amazing, amazing physician. He's the head of medicine at Bellevue, chief of the medical service at New York City Health and Hospitals at Bellevue, associate director of the bedside skills team, clinical associate professor in the Department of Medicine at NYU Grossman School of Medicine. Doug, welcome back. Always a great pleasure. You're one of my go-tos.
Absolutely a pleasure, Mark, to be here. And I realize there's a lot of uncertainty related to COVID and related to the vaccine and everything. And I think the best way to handle that is to talk about it. So I'm really thankful that you're having me on and very happy to talk about it.
Start with vaccine hesitancy. That was our last half hour. What are your views?
You know, Mark, I think it's very important to look at this disease and understand that all the social distancing, the wearing of masks has really helped. And just remind people that although we have therapies that are very effective for people that are very sick with the disease, the most important thing is prevention. And I think that the prevention, in addition to wearing masks and in addition to social distancing, is looking for a vaccine. And I think that the people, I'm very much for the vaccine, and if I was offered it today, I would take the vaccine. And I think the reason why is we do not have the perfect elixir for this disease. And so again, I think the emphasis has to be on prevention. And I think that some of the fear about the vaccine is probably, while understandable, is associated with fear of the disease in general. And so I would remind people that the real villain here and the real thing we're trying to prevent is the disease. So I would absolutely take the vaccine. These vaccines have serious testing, significant testing before they get to the point where patients are taking. And I would strongly advise that people do use the vaccine. Do you agree with that, Mark?
Completely. And I'm going to be one of the first if I can get to take it. And healthcare workers should be role models for this if we're designated to take it at the beginning. By the way, I said before, misspoke at the beginning and said a never-ending pandemic. This pandemic can be ended by an appropriately used effective vaccine. And that's what we're all hoping for. Doug, last week I had on Dr. Ali Khan, who you know. He's the Dean of Public Health at University of Nebraska Medical Center. What an amazing, amazing physician he is. One of the top epidemiologists in the country. And as you know, there's a great partnership going between Bellevue and Nebraska in terms of quarantines. He said something that I want to run by you that I never thought of before. He said he's not a fan of lockdowns because 70% of the spread occurs within households. We all know that. But he said that he thinks we're not doing a good enough job at contact tracing. And he said specifically what he would do. Now, of course, he was a major CDC officer under President Obama for years. He was the head of communicable diseases, really. And he went door to door with Ebola. So he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. But he says that we need to ramp up rapid testing around the United States and then connect it to more and more identification, isolation, contact tracing. That would help us flatten the curve more than anything else. We're doing that plus complying with public health measures, of course. What do you think?
I am absolutely in agreement. And let me take that little piece by piece here. I think the concept of lockdown, while it sounds like a great strategy, right, is putting a lot of people in the same room. And in the wintertime, that could have its own danger, right? So clearly, we need to follow the recommendations coming out by the CDC. I think it's extremely important to understand that masks work, that all these measures really work. But I do agree with you, Mark, and I agree with Dr. Khan, that the combination of rapid testing and contact tracing is the way to go here. And I can't emphasize that enough, how important contact tracing is. Health and hospitals, just so that people out there know, Bellevue Hospital is a flagship hospital in New York City, and it is part of a network of an 11 hospital system in New York City. And we take care of about 1 in 5 New Yorkers in the city. And we're very proud of our contact tracing efforts, which started out slow and really now have come to the point where we are are successfully able to take people that we know have gotten COVID, not treat them as criminals, but treat them as patients that need help, A, and that B, patients that we need to be able to trace their activities and talk to all the people they've been in contact with. This is not a draconian measure. This is a measure to try to figure out who we need to test with rapid tests. So I think armed with the combination of rapid testing and contact tracing, I think that literally is our path to get us through this disease until we have a vaccine. And as we develop a vaccine, I think that that would be the third arm. So I really do believe that contact tracing, just talking to the people who have had the disease, even if they're asymptomatic, and talking to all their friends and so forth, and containing it at the point of contact is the way to go here.
Okay, so let's start large and go more focused. What's going on in the United States right now with 120,000 new cases per day, hospitalizations now up to 50,000? We're going to talk next week with one of the top health officials in North Dakota, by the way. We're very inventive here, Doug. And I mean, that state is a total mess right now. Almost all of their ICUs are filled with COVID and non-COVID patients. So talk to me about the problem in the United States and what we can actually do about it.
Well, I think I have two comments on that. Number one is I think we have to dispel the myth that this is just going to pass through everywhere and there's no ability to alter that at all. And I think that there are some people out there that think, listen, New York got hit in April, North Dakota is getting hit now in November, and there's really no way you could change that, and we should just accept that and don't really do any preventative measures. I think we have to dispel that right away, because we know, and my second point would be, look at what's going on in areas of New York where people are really adhering to those social distancing policies and masking policies. Even though we've had spikes, we've been able to identify that those spikes are really related to breaches in those measures. And so what we have really shown in New York, and I'm not trying to, I know that you have listeners from all over the country, and by no means am I holding up New York as some kind of a, I'm not trying to be righteous here in any way, but to say that we've learned a lot about what is necessary. And I think the answer is masking and social distancing. I really worry this about holiday time, and I worry about this during the winter months. And I think the real key is to just adhere to those measures. And I don't think the answer is just let this pass through each place. We know that masks work, and we know that social distancing measures work. And I think that we should look at the social distancing as very important for two reasons. Number one, it's getting us to that vaccine, which is, for everyone listening out there, is coming. This is coming, and this will end. But number two, I think it's also important to state that one of the major reasons why we all want to socially distance and wear masks, even if you accept the fact that some people are going to get infected with this, we have a responsibility as citizens to not all get infected at the same time, because hospitals will be overwhelmed. And we saw that in New York in April. We saw that in New Jersey. We've seen that in other places, in Boston and on the West Coast and the Pacific Northwest. Is hospitals are not able to take everyone getting sick at the same time. So it really is paramount that people social distance for that reason as well.
Doug, how's Bellevue preparing for what may happen in the fall and winter here if it gets worse? I assume it's not worse yet.
It is not worse yet, Mark. Just want to give people a little background. Bellevue had a little head start and advantage, and you talked a little bit about Nebraska. For people that may not know, Nebraska, Emory, and Bellevue have a working coordinated effort. It's called the NETEC, which is a coordinated effort to try to teach other hospitals to provide preparation, education, and training for other hospitals. You know, the objective here is to identify, isolate, and potentially manage patients with special pathogens. And so we've been doing this for a few years, ever since the Ebola virus came out in 2014. So we had a bit of a head start in dealing with coronavirus. And I think that head start was very important, because that head start allowed us to take some of the first cases and be a transfer center for other hospitals that weren't quite ready. And I think to this day now, 6 months later, 7 months later, I think that Bellevue has stayed ahead of the curve. And I would say both Bellevue and NYU, and NYU has been heroic in this measure as well. The physicians, the residents that rotate through work in both these places. And I feel like that experience with different special pathogens really helped here. I would say right now in Bellevue, things are quiet. And while that's good, I think that there is a little feeling of, could there be another surge? And I think, Mark, I think you know better than I, but at NYU, we've seen some patients come in, mostly from isolated communities that are not socially distancing, so it's still considered sporadic. Bellevue, we're very quiet right now, but we are really preparing, and most of that preparation involves getting physicians and nurses together and getting them ready. And part of that is training them in areas that they might not have known before, so that your orthopedic surgeons might become medicine residents working on an acute medicine ward. But it also means facilities, Mark. And so there are many areas of the hospital that need to be set up in advance for the in anticipation for a surge. One of them, for instance, would be, and the public might not know this, but, you know, hospitals have special rooms that would best accommodate a patient with a disease like coronavirus. It's something called negative pressure. And so our hospital and NYU has many negative pressure rooms that would contain a virus from other patients so that people in a hospital would not have to be worried about contracting it. So there's many preparations underway. And our system, both throughout the city with health and hospitals and NYU, are ready to take care of patients at high levels. However, I would just warn people that as the winter approaches, hospitals do ultimately have a finite number of beds. And so this should all be in accordance with following those CDC recommendations. And we shouldn't think there's an infinite number of beds, but I think we're ready if there is a surge.
I want to dig deeper into this and pretend I'm a patient coming to the Bellevue ER, and I want to acquaint our listeners with the term influenza-like illness, which is a term we've used forever. We use body aches, fatigue, fever, could be flu-like illness. There's a lot of respiratory viruses around. So far, we've had a very mild flu season, which might be because of the compliance we're talking about. Certainly, it's less contagious, less transmissible than COVID. But if I came into your ER, Doug, and I'm sure people are coming in, even if you're not seeing a lot of COVID cases, I'll rule out COVID or rule out flu. How do you handle them? What kind of equipment are the ERs using? When does the medical service get involved?
Excellent question. And I think the first thing I would say is this is all very scary for probably all the listeners out there because you don't know, and neither do doctors know whether this is flu or COVID. You don't know. And I just would add that I don't want everyone to think that COVID is dangerous and potentially a deadly disease, and influenza is not. Influenza also is a dangerous problem. I'm not saying rush to your ER if you get it. In fact, the recommendation first, and you asked me about if you present it to our ER, the first recommendation is if you're feeling okay and you're just having fever and you're not short of breath and you don't have any concerning symptoms, is actually to stay home and to call your doctor and not necessarily go to the ER right away. But I don't want the public to know that they can't go to the ER. I would say if you need to go, you should go. And if you do go, as you just asked, Mark, I think what happens is ERs now have isolation rooms all set up for this. They have doctors that are wearing the proper PPE, and they're treating you as if you could be a COVID patient or an influenza patient. They don't know. And they now have tests that can usually they'll swab your nose. They have tests that pretty rapidly could tell you what they're dealing with. And we've really ramped up these tests. So now the ER has available, they'll put you in isolation, they'll put a mask on you, they'll be in isolation, they'll treat you just like any other patient, but you'll be in your own space, and they will be able to send that test. And within a very short amount of time, they will have the answer, is this influenza or is this COVID? If it is COVID, we have the ability to take care of you the same way as influenza. We're going to keep you in isolation, but it's just a different set of precautions that we follow and sometimes different medicines. So I want to kind of make people feel like, I just want you to know that the hospitals have this down. They have the ability to test for both things, and they have the ability to keep you safe in a very safe environment. There is not unlimited supplies, right? So I think it's very important that if you feel otherwise fine, to isolate yourself at home, to talk to your doctor and not go to the ER if you're feeling otherwise fine. And I think that that's sometimes complex for patients. And I don't want to send the message not to go to the ER if you don't need to. So they're always available for you, and you should never be afraid. And the hospitals have those facilities available for every patient that comes in that could stay isolated until they're diagnosed.
I want to dig a tiny bit deeper on this. Maybe I'm being too technical, but what kind of tests? I mean, you have a rapid flu test you can get right away. Are you using the Abbott test so that you get answered in 20 minutes on COVID, or are you doing a rapid throughput on the PCR and getting the answer in 3 hours? Obviously, that dictates the policy. So are you confident in the Abbott test, or do you want to go to the PCR if someone you think might have COVID?
I'd like to go to the PCR if you don't think someone has COVID. I don't know exactly how long it takes. I think somewhere in the hour of 1 to 3 hours for that rapid test. Sometimes when you get admitted to the hospital for something else not related to COVID, you're going to get a test that is not rapid, and that's going to be a test that we call it bioreference in our hospital. Every hospital is a little different. That test could take sometimes 24 hours, and you'd stay in an isolated room for that day. If you have ILI, which, as Mark mentioned, is influenza-like illness, and you come to a place like Bellevue or NYU, you're going to get a rapid test, and we will know relatively soon, in the matter of an hour or two, if you have COVID. These tests are not perfect. We obviously use these tests in accordance with people's symptoms, but we very frequently will get the answer rapidly.
Doug, what do you want people out there to know? You mentioned fear. You mentioned they're shaky about it. I mean, it's coming, the winter, respiratory virus. What do you want people to know?
Two things. One of them I mentioned already, which is I think that social distancing is not just so that you don't get this disease. I think social distancing is also that we space out the communicability, so to speak, so that we don't overwhelm our hospitals. And so I'd like everyone to have a little bit of a feeling of understanding that it's more than just, I don't want to get this disease, which of course is the issue, but also that I don't want to be in big groups of people where many people are presenting to the hospitals at the same time. We all need our hospitals, and that's one message I really want to send. The second thing I want to say is the vaccine is coming, and I want people to understand that we are in a way right now buying time, and that if we could comply with social distancing and masking up front now, we could really save ourselves later. And I say that because if we do that for a concentrated effort just through this winter, and I know this is not easy, and I have two kids in college and a third on the way, and this is very hard, right? I understand that. But if we could do that just for a few months, we really do have promise coming. And I think if we don't do that and we're going to look back in 6 months, we're going to regret it not having done it because things could theoretically get worse. So I would just tell the public that I think it's very important to comply with these CDC recommendations of wearing a mask and social distancing as we approach holidays and winter, because I think that if we do that, next year we'll have looked back and said, it's a good thing we did. And I think we have to look at this as a finite amount of time, not an infinite amount of time, and that ultimately this will pay off.
Dr. Doug Bales, who is our chief of medicine at Bellevue, one of our leaders here at NYU Grossman School of Medicine, chief of the medical service, New York City Health and Hospitals, Bellevue, has been on the front lines against COVID-19 from the beginning. Thank you so much for joining us today on Dr. Radio Reports. We hope you'll come back soon.
I'd love to be invited, Mark. I love these kind of discussions. And I think that the best way, if you're dealing with people with fear, with anxiety, I think the best way is to talk to physicians and people that know and have experienced this disease. I think that just looking at the news all the time could get overwhelming. And I think talking to healthcare professionals actually has a role besides just seeing your doctor, but to understand the medicine behind and the science behind things, I think that makes a big difference. I'm happy to join.
Get facts, not fear, from SiriusXM's Doctor Radio, presented by the leading experts from NYU Langone Health. To learn more about Doctor Radio, including shows and schedules, go to SiriusXM.com/Doctor Radio.